prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a really, really important show for you today. As many of my listeners know, I usually kind of squirm when people talk about detox, and rightfully so. There are a lot of hucksters out there today who want to sell you things that that stick to the bottom of your feet, and because they turn black, they're telling you that all the toxins in your body are rushing out of cells down into the soles of your feet and escaping that way. And, you know, it's become kind of a snake oil environment, quite frankly. But detoxification on a cellular level is important to understand. It has to happen. It does happen. And my guest today, Dr. Brian Walsh, understands this. In fact, he probably came from the same position that I came from at one point in time and said, you know, this is all wrong and there is a right way to do this. And he has really laid it out very eloquently, and we're going to discuss that in a couple minutes. Of course, I have to pay homage to the show's title sponsor, All-American Pharmaceutical and EFX Sports. And right now you can get six of their top-selling products absolutely free if you go to superhumanradio.net, click the EFX Sports banner ad, enter your address. You'll pay $5 and change for shipping, but that's legitimately shipping. This is not a self-liquidating scam. And you'll get six of their top-selling products absolutely free so you can try them, because Dr. Jeff Galini believes that no one should buy anything before they try it. And if you like it, then you can buy more. And that is his idea. And without further delay, Dr. Brian Walsh, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Wonderful. Wonderful. We're both wonderful. There you go. And you know, what I said at the intro of the show, I think is something that you discovered early on, too, that there are a lot of hucksters. There are a lot of people out there that want to sell people detox diets and programs that hardly do anything at all, right?
And maybe even make people worse, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And so tell your story. What made you take this deep dive into understanding detox on a cellular level, which is critical? Because, you know, clearing stuff out of your intestines has a good effect, but that's not getting the crud out of your cells.
No, so thanks for asking. The story is a good one. I have been in this business, I guess, for, you know, a couple of decades now. And even before that, I read all the books, all the health books and the detox books and all those types of things. And so I heard what everybody else heard, that we're really toxic, that we're going to die from these toxins if we don't do something about them, and that we need to actively detoxify our body. And so that was sort of what I believed. Now, when I became a practitioner, you know that there's professional supplement companies out there, and many of them have detoxification programs where it's 2 to 3 weeks, you do an elimination diet, you take a bunch of supplements, and that's supposed to detoxify you. Despite the fact that there's no studies anywhere, that at least that I've found and I've looked, that show that any of those programs actually reduce what's called the total body burden, which is really what people talk about. If you're toxic, is the stuff that is stored inside of you. So what happened was, I was talking to a colleague one day, and she was referring to one of these detox gurus. I won't mention this guy's name. But he was describing, and we'll get into this, phase three detoxification, and she was telling me what her understanding was based on this guy. And it didn't jive what I thought phase three detoxification was. So I went into where I always go for my answers, went into PubMed, and decided to see what the scientific literature said phase three actually was. And you know, you've been into PubMed. It's a rabbit hole. One study leads to five more, leads to a dozen more.
Right.
And in this short foray into PubMed, three things happened. One is I found what phase three actually was, and that this guy was wrong. And I have a problem with that. In this industry, the nutritional functional medicine industry, there's a lot of people that are making a lot of claims about things, and I have a problem if a guru is talking about something incorrectly. The second thing that happened was I found that there was a phase zero detoxification. Now, I've been in this business for a while. I'd never, ever, ever heard anybody talk about phase zero. And I thought, well, wait a minute. If we're talking about detoxification and there's a pathway that I've never heard about before, don't you think we should know about this and be talking about this, that this is going to inform these detoxification principles or processes. And then the third one wasn't necessarily more compelling, but this is the one that just put the nail in the coffin for me. I thought, we don't even know what we're doing or talking about. And it was basically that there's a what's called a biphasic effect for a number of different nutrients, herbs, and specific to detoxification, there's a handful of herbs that I read about that are usually found in like milk thistle, in detoxification programs or protocols or formulas, that the biphasic effect suggests, and there's plenty of literature to show this, that in a low dose actually stimulated certain detoxification pathways, but at a high dose inhibited the very same detoxification pathway.
Interesting.
Now, in English, what that means is the amount probably found in food in a low dose, the way that sort of nature provided it for us, stimulates detoxification. But the second that you start to extract and concentrate and isolate, it's possible these fans, you know, we think if a little is good, then more is better. But the biphasic effect suggests that that's absolutely not true. And in fact, so when I did this and I found those three things, I thought, you know what? Everything I've been taught about detoxification, and I ran detox programs with my patients just based on the information I had prior. I said, I don't know anything about this. I think once again in this industry we have this wrong. I cleared out all my biases, everything I knew about detox, and I decided that I needed to start from scratch. And this was purely selfish, quite honestly. This was, I need to find out the truth about this for myself. So I asked myself some basic questions, some really basic questions. Like, one, are we even toxic in the first place? You hear a lot of these things all the time. We're super toxic. Well, where's the proof? I want to see the proof.
Right.
If we are toxic, does it get stored in our bodies? I've heard that, but I wanted to see the proof on it. I wanted to find out, one of the adages that you hear in conventional medicine is that the dose makes the poison. And a lot of naysayers to detoxification say, well, the amounts that we're exposed to isn't enough to cause any problems. I wanted to find out if that was true or not. And the findings of that, by the way, are it's scary. I've heard that there's a synergistic effect. If you combine 10 different toxins, that it's worse than just one. Again, where's the proof on that? If we are, in fact, toxic, how do we test that? How do we find out? It's kind of an important question to ask. So I looked into that. And then finally, if we are toxic, if it is stored in us, if they are causing problems, if a low dose is just as bad as a high dose, if we can test this, what is the most scientifically evidence-based way of safely excreting these toxins from our body? So that's the story. And I looked at over 300 papers. It took me months to go through all this stuff. And I'm happy to say that I found proof, in many cases, a lot of proof, on answers to all those questions that I had in the first place. So on the outset, I can basically say that, yes, we are toxic. We could talk more about these things. We are, all of us are exposed. There's no question about that. It does get stored. However, it's going to vary by person. In terms of is there synergistic, we can answer some of those questions as well, but I do believe that we probably need to take some active attempts
right.
at trying to eliminate toxins from our body, especially if somebody has symptoms. And when I say symptoms, according to the literature, toxicity symptoms can range the gamut. It can be, here's what something that's really interesting. When you look at some conventional medicine diagnoses, many of them have published papers suggesting that xenobiotic, which is a better word than toxin, xenobiotic exposure may not only be contributing to some of these chronic diseases, but actually causing them. And yes, there's things like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Those are pretty straightforward, but there's some compelling papers showing cardiovascular disease and atherosclerosis may have a basis in xenobiotic exposure, obesity, as well as even things like type 2 diabetes. So this to me now, and listen, I don't expect anybody to believe me. I have convinced myself by spending months and hours of time looking at the literature to say, yes, we are. Yes, it is a problem. It's probably a bigger problem than we realize.
Right.
And if you care about your health, you might want to consider doing a scientifically evidence-based detoxification type of thing.
So there's something else is on the rise, right? So I figured some of it out, but there is an idiopathic neuropathy that's occurring in people who are not diabetic. Clearly, they have gut issues because almost all of them have gut issues, but probably 99.9% of them have some sort of gut issue. Many of them also have what looks like autoimmune type issues. I'm wondering if toxicity could be responsible for this. And the reason I say this is the literature always says that these types of neuropathy start in the legs because the nerves are longer there. But I tend to think they start in the legs because gravity and poor circulation and stuff gets gathered, you know, from the feet up first. Any thoughts on are you seeing anything in the literature about the rise in neuropathy that's non-diabetic related?
No, I actually haven't looked into that specifically. but what I can say is one of the other questions that I had was, you know, these toxins are supposedly so bad. But my question was, why? What do they do? What is the specific physiological or biochemical mechanism of action of, and there's too many toxins to talk about.
Right.
But what really makes them so problematic? Yes, there's the endocrine disruptors, but where are they actually causing the problem? And it turns out that neurons, one could say the nervous system, but that's really just a bunch of neurons, is a target for a number, not all, but a number of xenobiotics. So, you know, I don't know about the gravity. Poor circulation, things might accumulate in the legs, I suppose. But yeah, no, it's neurological issues, regardless if it's the central nervous system or peripheral, can absolutely be caused by a number of different xenobiotics.
And see, we have to pay attention to our nervous system. We don't pay attention to our nervous system, but the nervous system is like the wiring harness in your car. If one wire loses shielding, all of a sudden door locks open and close every time you make a left turn. It's like all these quirky things that are hard to pin down. Your doctor can't figure it out. But when you look at aging in general, this previously was blamed on demyelination. When you look at aging in general, a lot of the phenotypical issues about aging, a slower stride walk, slower response, trouble thinking, these are all nervous system related, and we're not paying enough attention to our nervous system. In fact, if what we do to overcome and compensate for the degradation of our nervous system, we just keep pounding more and more caffeine into our bodies. That's a zero sum game. It's not going to work at some point in time, and you're going to be effed by then. So this detox thing, to me, now that you said some of these affect the nervous system, this is really kind of scary.
Oh, I totally think so. And, you know, I hadn't thought of this before, but as you're speaking about that, to me, the nervous system is kind of like the canary in the coal mine.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is because, I don't know how deep to get into cellular physiology, but
go ahead. Go ahead. We have some really intelligent listeners. Maybe I won't understand, but they will.
No. Neurons are really unique cells in that I kind of see them as a sniper. And, you know, I don't have a lot of history in terms of the armed services, but a lot of times a sniper will have somebody next to them because the sniper is targeted on one thing. They have one single solitary job, and they're looking through that scope, and they can't see everything around them. So they have a helper next to them to be able to scan the environment. Neurons are so highly specific with what they do. They have the action potential and they fire. But in the nervous system, you have all these helper cells. You have like astrocytes and oligodendrocytes and epidermal cells and all these different cells to help, which you don't have anywhere else in the body. Neurons are so highly specific. They have one single job.
Right.
And that's what they do. So they have all these support cells around them to make sure they can do their job well. Because they're so highly specific, if something goes wrong, even something small, causing neurological symptoms of any kind, I don't care, again, if it's a mood disorder or some kind of progressive disease like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or ADD, ADHD, or something as simple as peripheral neuropathy, if neurons are not working well, that to me is a sign, that an early sign potentially, that something is going wrong, and if left to its own devices will cause problems.
It's just going to degrade. Cells. I agree with you. It's just going to degrade, and that's why it has to be paid attention to, and I wanted to point that out. So what I want to do is I want to take our first commercial break, and When we come back, I want to start to dive into the process, phase 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4. We'll take it slow. We've got plenty of time. You're my only guest today. And I want to kind of detail this. And also, during the next segment, we will tell you the websites you can go to. If you are having time, you can't listen to the entire podcast right now, that you will be able to go to and get more information about this and actually start your own detox program. And if you're a clinician, the good doctor has a way for you to be trained in this protocol as well. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of Superhuman Radio.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
If you suffer from abdominal bloating, relief is here. Introducing
Atrantil.
Developed by a board-certified gastroenterologist, it relieves bloating where it starts, in the small bowel. That's why
Atrantil
works while other remedies don't. In clinical trials, 88% of bloating sufferers who use prescription medications with no relief found
Atrantil
relieve their symptoms, and it's available without a prescription because
Atrantil
is made from a patented molecular combination of botanical extracts. It's not a probiotic. Plus, it's natural, vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO.
Atrantil, Atrantil.
Atrantil. Even the name is proven to make you feel better.
Go to lovemytummy.com and use code SHR for 10% off. That's code SHR at lovemytummy.com. Lovemytummy.com.
Who ever heard of a supplement company that lets you pick the products they make and sell? What you have now, we are All American Body, a factory direct supplement brand proudly brought to you by All American Pharmaceutical. Don't pay more somewhere else. You can get the same or even better products directly from us. Now check this out. All American Body is a brand about you. Tell us what to make next so you can save big. Go ahead and request a specific ingredient. You know, arginine, citrulline, vitamin D, a product type or category, keto, greens, naturals, herbals, nootropics, and even a specific branded product or formula. We'll either copy it exactly or make it even better. And best of all, it won't cost anything close to what you've been paying, period. And if we do end up using your suggestion, you'll get the first bottle absolutely free. We'll also give you full credit on that product's description page. You'll be famous, signing autographs and people asking you to take pictures with them wherever you go. So head on over to allamericanbody.com right now. That's allamericanbody.com and make your product request today. All American Body. Crazy savings, insane results.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000, or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number 1.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
So Elise and I just enjoyed our first Green Chef experience last night, and I got to tell you something. It was amazing. We placed our order, and it arrived not only quickly, but frozen. You know, we've talked about this on the air. There's some other people out there that are shipping product now. It's all thought out by the time you get. This stuff was frozen solid. Green Chef delivers fresh, organic, sustainably sourced ingredients along with super easy-to-follow recipes. They're actually color-coded. You can't mix anything up. It's quick and easy, step-by-step instructions, chef tips, photos. They guide you along the process. Green Chef is a USDA certified organic company. Meal plans include paleo, vegan, vegetarian, keto, gluten-free, omnivore, and carnivore, which is all the rage today. And the finished product is delicious. Last night, we had the tomato braised chicken thighs. I got to tell you, I'm Italian. This was amazing. And it comes with everything you need and pretty much prepared, and you just follow the directions, and literally 10, 15 minutes into it, you realize you have an amazing meal. My audience will get $50 off their first box of Green Chef. Go to greenchef.us/SHR and sign up. That's $50 off your first order when you go to greenchef.us/SHR. I promise you, you will not be disappointed with this. We have Dr. Brian Walsh on. We're talking about really detoxing the body, not the nonsense that you see so many people promoting out there. So you came up with a protocol that seems to be very, very effective, and we were talking about it last night. If you could kind of start us off with phase zero and take us through the phases and explain what actually is going on here.
Sure. So one of the myths of detoxification is that it only occurs in the liver. That there's a number of, well, the enzymes required, and these phases, by the way, are found in the kidneys, it's found in the gastrointestinal tract, it's found in the testes. So it's not just the liver. And I want to make clear, though, it happens inside of a cell. So what I would like people to do is picture you're inside of a room that has two doors. That's going to be this cell. Now, phase zero is the most recently discovered phase, and that's probably part of the reason why you haven't really heard much about it. But phase zero, quite simply, is a transporter that brings whatever, and again, I'll call it a xenobiotic or a toxin, but brings whatever xenobiotic into the cell in the first place. So phase zero is merely just a transporter. So now that xenobiotic comes into your room, now it's inside. And the metaphor that I use is, imagine it's a person. So this toxic person comes into your room. Now, phase one, there's a number of different enzymes, usually the cytochrome P450 family of enzymes. It's a large family. And what phase one does is either adds what's called a hydroxyl group, an OH, or exposes a hydroxyl group that's already on this compound. So to put it in the metaphor, so somebody comes in phase zero, they come in the first door, and you're sitting in there, and you start insulting them. You start berating them. You uncover things in them that they didn't want uncovered. And now they're really angry and upset. After a toxin or a xenobiotic goes through phase one, it's called an intermediate metabolite. And it's considered to be, in many cases, more toxic than the original compound in the first place. Mm-hmm. This is really well established. Sometimes it can act as a free radical. Other times it gets manipulated so that as this new molecule, technically, that it can actually cause more damage to the body than the original toxin in the first place. So it comes in through phase zero. Now it's inside of the room or the cell. Phase one either exposes or adds a hydroxyl group. Then there's a few other things, but that's a pretty good summary. So now this person's really angry. And because they're more toxic, they start flipping over your table and throwing your computer across the room and start yelling back at you, and they're damaging your room, which is to say they're damaging the cell. Well, fortunately, phase two, there's a number of different phase two specific enzymes or pathways, but they're all referred to as conjugation pathways. And that's because something is being added to it. So you have this really angry, toxic person who's thrashing your room or messing up the cell, and you hand them $100. Now this person, who's going to be upset when they just get handed $100? Mm-hmm. They're no longer toxic. They're no longer angry. Now, some of the phase two pathways are things like sulfation. They add a sulfur group. There's methylation. It adds a methyl group. There's glucuronidation. It adds a glucuronic acid group. Glutathione conjugation, amino acid conjugation, acetylation. So these phase two, just imagine that it gets handed something. Now it's not angry. Now it's not toxic.
It's preoccupied.
It's happy. It's fully water soluble. And by the way, I should say that there are really two different types of toxins. There's water soluble and fat soluble. The water soluble ones can cause damage, but because most of the body's water in the first place, including the routes of excretion, those don't cause as much damage. They don't get stored. It's the fat soluble ones that need to go through these.
But I want to ask you a question, because this came up when we started talking about vitamin B6 toxicity from some energy drinks months ago. And the reality is that we say things are water soluble, and that kind of makes us feel comfortable, like, oh, well, I'm going to urinate it out. But what if you're not drinking enough water in the first place?
Oh, sure. No, there is toxicity to these things, for sure. But but in terms of these detoxification pathways, the purpose of phase 0, 1, 2, and 3 is really to take a fat-soluble substance that cannot easily be excreted. I should say, the routes of excretion are urination. There's a little bit of water in poop, so you can poop it out. You can sweat it out. You technically can salivate it out, and if you cry enough, you can cry it out.
I'm crying. You know what? There's a new book, the Crying Detox book. There you go.
Yeah, no, just watch a lot of reruns of This Is Us, and that'll take care of it.
There you go.
So anyways, so those are water aqueous routes of excretion for these things. So that's the purpose of this. So after phase one, it's technically water soluble, but now it's in some cases more toxic. So phase two calms it down. It's no longer a toxic molecule, and it's not going to cause problems. Now, the second door in the room, that's phase three. This thing, now that it's been essentially, it's been detoxified. Excretion is not detoxification per se. It's excretion. It's getting rid of it.
Right.
This compound has now been detoxified, done. But we have to get it out of the body. So we're inside the cell still. This now happy person that's not toxic and they're water soluble and they have their $100 bill, they exit via phase three. They exit that second door. Then they go into the interstitial fluid and they can be peed out, pooped out, salivated out, sweated out, or cried out. And then it's out of the body. Now, the problem is, however, is if, let's say that second door is locked, it doesn't get open. If something inhibits phase three, you can take that $100 back. There's enzymes in the body that can take that $100 back. And guess what it turns back into? Not what it was when it came in the door, but what it was after phase one, that intermediate metabolite.
Which you said can actually be more toxic than the primary metabolite, the primary agent,
so,
right?
There are, that I know of, five different enzymes that can do that. The most common one that people talk about in this industry is beta-glucuronidase. It undoes what glucuronidation does in phase two. But there's other enzymes that will do it. So this is a critical part of detoxification, is getting it out of the cell via phase three into the interstitial fluid, into the water of the body, so that and then actually have it excreted. Because if it's not, what was done in that detoxification process can get undone. So phase zero is entry into the cell. Phase one is making it water soluble, adding or exposing a hydroxyl group. It becomes an intermediate metabolite, goes through one of the phase two pathways, gets something handed to it, depending on what the compound was. And then phase three is exiting the cell, going into, let's just say, the rest of the body for excretion.
So what fouls up phase three? What fouls up showing this now happy drunk to the door and getting him out of the cell?
Well, so here's what, this is where it's really problematic, is there's a number of toxins. The toxins themselves will actually inhibit phase three. So things like bisphenol A, phthalates, PCBs, certain organochlorines, which people probably know.
Several of those are, in fact, endocrine disruptors. They mimic other hormones. Yeah. Phthalates block the androgen receptor. Bisphenol A looks like estrogen, so it binds up the estrogen receptor.
Yeah, so this is where it really becomes a vicious cycle, because the very toxin that you're trying to eliminate out of the body actually inhibits phase three. But here is where, you know, that original story I told you becomes interesting. So it turns out, how do I put this? Things that are typically thought to be healthy for a cell, so things like curcumin, things like catechins from green tea, chlorogenic acid from green coffee beans, piperine, which is not considered to be healthy, but some elements of things like broccoli and Brussels sprouts. Now, this all starts to come together. The reason why those things are healthy for cells is because they inhibit phase three. So why, for example, are catechins from green tea considered to be anti-cancer? Because they can block phase three and then stay inside of the cell and then exert their effects inside of the cell. But the problem with this is, and it's everything is in context. So I don't have any problems. Well, curcumin is a little funky to me, but curcumin, green tea, milk thistle is a mild phase three inhibitor. These things, I don't have a problem with them, but it's all in context. And the problem is that many detoxification formulas that I've looked at have these very items in there. And to me, if you're really, truly trying to detox, and I'm not talking about fancy, sexy, Hollywood-type detox.
Yeah, right.
I'm saying if you really want to detoxify your body for a period of time that you're doing a detox, I say don't take those things, because if there's any chance of something inhibiting any of those phases, like diesel exhaust inhibits phase zero, incidentally, if there's anything that inhibits any one of those phases, it's not an optimal detoxification program.
Right.
So I say leave out the green tea, leave out the curcumin, and I know it's heresy in this industry, but I say leave. Milk thistle is a phenomenal hepatic botanical.
Right.
But if it potentially mildly inhibits phase three, in my book, that does not belong in the detox.
Okay, so now, but we're talking about supplements at this moment. We're talking about concentrated, portions of a whole food. What about if you just use a little black pepper on your steak, as opposed to taking something that has a concentrated, curcumin plus bipyrene, so it absorbs better? Didn't you say a little bit seems to work and a lot seems to not work? Can't we just say, look, stop taking the supplements while you're trying to detox and do these things to enhance the detox, but go ahead and eat whole foods?
Yeah, a little bit of pepper is on your food is probably not going to cut. In fact,
right.
Piperine is one of the biphasic nutrients. So it in low doses might actually stimulate phase three, but in a high dose might inhibit.
So what you've really discovered, quite frankly, and I'm sorry to say this for a lot of the supplement industry, but what you've really discovered is that people need to focus on eating the right foods, and not overeating them, obviously, for other reasons. We're going to get into the whole lipolysis thing here in a second. But eating the right foods and avoiding a lot of these quote-unquote supplements, it sounds like.
Yeah, and it's funny. You might have had a similar trajectory, like way back, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. I was like everybody else. You read a book, you learn about a supplement, and then you start taking it.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like it's a miracle cure. Next thing you never stop taking one. So next thing you know, you have 30, 40 bottles of supplements, and you're taking other things. I have to say that the detoxification, I have supplements in it, but they're binders. And I'll get into that too. There's some really compelling stuff about that as well. But the core of it, actually, it's not sexy. That's the problem. Sexy cells. It's not sexy. It's very food-based. But what I did was I found human clinical trials that had specific amounts of specific foods consumed showing that it increased certain detoxification enzymes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, as much as I would like to say, let's make some fancy, shiny bottle that has all these cool ingredients in it, I personally think that those don't have a place. If you really are truly... If you're detoxing so that you can tell your Facebook friends, that's one thing. But if you're really, truly trying to detoxify your body in a non-sexy way, you really want to do it. I think that by and large, most supplements, because we truly, and there's another piece I could tell you, it's a little bit more technical. We truly don't know their effect on detoxification. In fact, if I may, I'll just say this really quickly. So, anytime I talk about this, inevitably somebody raises their hand and says, well, I've heard that fill-in-the-blank nutrient enhances detoxification.
Right.
And so here's my the checklist. And this is maybe the most technical part of the call. But here's the checklist that people have to go through when looking at the scientific literature to see if something truly detoxifies or not. Number one, was that supplement done in a petri dish in the study? Was done in an animal model, and that's a problem too, because it turns out they've done the genome for rodents, And not surprisingly, they have different detoxification capacities than we do. When you consider where they live and what they eat,
yeah,
they have to be highly adaptable.
Right.
So was it done in a petri dish? Was it done in a rodent? Or was it done in a human clinical trial? The second thing is when looking at detoxification in the studies, when it comes to a nutrient or a supplement, what they do is they'll look at detoxification enzyme activity. So let's just say cytochrome P450-3A4 or something. And they'll look to see if it's increased or decreased in the presence of a certain supplement or nutrient. They look at this in two ways, however. One of them is they look at what's called the mRNA expression, which right. is really how much of the protein this cell is making. But in other studies, they'll look at how active the actual enzyme is. Now, here's the problem. There was one study looking at quercetin. It was in vitro in a cell. They applied quercetin and a toxin to a cell. The mRNA expression for the detox enzyme they're looking at went down. So the suggestion there is that quercetin would inhibit detoxification. However, in the cells that were treated with quercetin, increased the elimination of that toxin. So that starts to get confusing.
Right.
Also, you have to ask the location of the enzyme and their studies on it. It turns out that they have, and this is for anybody that says, well, what about, again, milk this or green tea or whatever you want to talk about. There's a paper that I saw that used a certain nutrient, and they found that in the liver, it increased a specific detoxification enzyme. In the kidney, it decreased the activity of that same detoxification enzyme.
Hmm.
And in the gut, had no change on that detoxification enzyme. So the next question is what tissue was this even studied in?
Yeah.
Another one is the dose. Is there a biphasic effect, low dose versus high dose? And then the last one is how long? Usually it's an acute dose, and they just look at it right then and there. But I saw one study on resveratrol that showed that acutely resveratrol inhibited certain detoxification enzymes, but over the period of 2 weeks increased them. So if anybody says, well, I heard that blank increases detoxification, You have to look so deeply into the literature, looking at those five different variables to decide if, in fact, something might increase detoxification. And the only one that I really know of, which you don't typically find in detox protocols, is St. John's wort, which is usually used for reasons of depression. But in every, I won't get into it too much, but St. John's wort is probably the most studied herb. The reason why is because it negatively interacts with almost every single medication out there. So conventional medicine is very aware of this, and they've studied it extensively. It potently stimulates phase 3, for example, as well as some phase 1 enzymes. So I went into that. I know that was a little bit deep and kind of a lot, but it's
this is great. I mean, my brain is working so fast because I keep asking myself, why would the body do that? Everything, I look at everything through evolutionary perspectives, and you know, our body is perfect. It knows what it wants to do. We foul it up. And I'm thinking, why would the body?
And that's the point. That's exactly what I'm saying is the program put together is largely food-based, which is not sexy. And people say, well, how does food going to detoxify us when they have all these?
Yeah, isn't that what's clogging me up? Because everybody thinks of toxicity as I haven't had a good bowel movement in 3 months. Oh, you're toxic. No, you're constipated. There's a big difference between what gets caught in the cells and what's passing through your digestive tract. Not that one totally. Doesn't. Not that what you eat doesn't contribute to the environmental load accumulation of these toxins. But you know they're very, very different. So, tell me about the binders before we go on, because I also want to talk about lipolysis. I want to talk about the new research that you found on sodium bicarb as well. Tell me about the binders. Which ones are good binders?
Well, there's a really good question. So I, you know, you've heard of like bentonite clay and
yeah.
zeolite and all these
yeah.
different things. I wanted to make this program, again, this was done for selfish purposes. I wanted to create what I considered to be the best detoxification program for myself and my family, quite honestly. That was why. And when I started coming across some of this stuff, I thought, man, people need to know about this. So I only included things that had some scientific backing to them. Now, during meals, it's important to take binders. Well, let me take a step back. So go back to the room. Once that compound is conjugated and leaves via phase 3, if that occurs in the liver, one of the sites of elimination is via bile. So as bile is leaving, so do some of these toxins. And then bile, of course, goes in gallbladder or goes into our intestines and has to get excreted out. Now, bile is interesting because bile has been shown to essentially be recirculated 14 to 17 times
wow.
before it is actually eliminated. The problem is there's a lot of stuff in bile that we want to get out. So in the feeding portion, when people are eating of the detox program, I have them take a lot of fibers, for example. Actually, let me take a step back. So in the literature, this is really interesting. There are some toxins that are historically really difficult to get rid of. And you're familiar with cholestyramine, the
yes.
old cholesterol-lowering medication?
Yeah, yeah.
So what this guy did was, is he looked at people, so smart, but he gave people cholestyramine and found that the people that were taking cholestyramine had greater excretion of this difficult to get rid of toxin than people that didn't take cholestyramine. Now, not everybody can just go to the doctors and get cholestyramine.
Yeah, right.
But what does cholestyramine do? It's a bile acid sequestrant that's binding onto bile and it's pulling it out of the body so that it doesn't get recirculated. And incidentally, that's how it lowers cholesterol. But what do we have in the nutritional arsenal that does the same thing? Well, it turns out that soluble and insoluble fiber is really good at binding onto bile and pulling it out. So during the detox program, while people are actually eating, they consume things like there's some probiotics. The literature on probiotics and toxins is fascinating. It's very new. We don't know that much, but it's very interesting. But a lot of fiber. And then here's the real kicker, though, is, you know, I don't get excited about too many things, but sometimes you read a paper and you're like, holy cow, we need to do something about this. These are all rodent studies. They've never done this on humans, unfortunately.
Right.
But what they've done in a number of different rodent studies is they've injected, now this is not ingested, this is injected certain toxins. And then what they'll do is they'll look inside the gastrointestinal tract later, and in all cases, they found evidence of that toxin which was injected into the body is in the gastrointestinal tract. Now, that's because, incidentally, of phase zero and then phase three in the gastrointestinal
right.
tract.
Right.
So in a detoxification program, if somebody, and we'll talk about lipolysis, but if somebody has loads of toxins now floating around their body, during periods of fasting, those things are getting dumped inside the gastrointestinal tract. We have to bind those up during those times of fasting so that they can't be reabsorbed. And so it turns out that things like activated charcoal, which is not a new supplement, but there's some really compelling studies on activated charcoal. And there's another one, which I hate it for its typical use, but chitosan, the fat, you know, the one used for fat loss. There's some really interesting
studies. Chitosan. That comes from lobster shells or something.
Yeah, it turns out that that's a phenomenal binder of some toxins and has actually been shown to help increase.
I have all this stuff because I'm that geek that you talked about before that has like, I literally have like 6,000 supplements at home. I have activated charcoal. I have bentonite clay. I have two big bottles of chitosan that I bought when some study was released that I never used. Now I know why. I'm going to take them when I fast. I'm fasted right now from 6 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
During a fasted state, and we can talk about the time restricted feeding bit and the
yeah we're gonna get into that when we talk about lipolysis after the next break. We're gonna talk
yeah,
about
but the chitosan and also the another one that had some interesting enough research was modified citrus pectin as another binder to
really?
Be taken away from meals. Yeah,
interesting.
That's what I mean. So the program that I put together. There's no supplements to help support phase one and phase two. One could argue things like calcium D-glucarate or N-acetylcysteine, and you know they may have a place in this program. I'm not convinced enough
because yet. Of the glutathione, the N-acetylcysteine, because of the
glutathione for glutathione conjugation and calcium D-glucarate. Glucarate inhibits beta glucuronidation,
right.
which essentially indirectly makes glucuronidation more potent. But interestingly. And here we get back to basic foods, which I know are not sexy enough for most people today. But honeybush tea and rooibos tea. Now, these are rodent studies. I tried
yeah.
to eat human
rooibos
trials
is really good. Yeah. Isn't rooibos the one that has kind of a creosote flavor to it?
Yeah, no, it's quite good. And I think honeybush tastes pretty good, too. But in some rodent studies, they let the rodents drink as much as they wanted to of either one of those, and it increased glucuronidation. So
And it also made them more civilized. I heard they used all, they oh, also that, yeah, they also started to keep that. Their pinkies up when they were drinking the tea. Yeah,
interesting. Yeah, I don't know about that.
No, I'm joking.
Maybe. Yeah, right. Pinkies up.
I was thinking of the British. You know how civilized right, they are, and they have tea in the afternoon.
Yeah, tea, right.
It was a bad joke. It was a bad joke. It was a bad joke. But anyway, interesting. Interesting. I want to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about something that I have been actually promoting on the show as a method of detoxification, and that is allowing your fat cells to squeeze out and squirt out all the crap in them through lipolysis and dieting. And let's talk about that when we come back. How's that sound?
Perfect.
All right, so sit tight. We're going to be right back with more of Dr. Brian Walsh. Your brain is going to get so big, you're going to need a new head at the end of this show. Stay tuned.
Dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
What if a sports nutrition company actually let you try all of their best products for free before you ever bought one? You'd be dreaming, right? Well, you're not dreaming. Head over to EFXSports.com and grab their new sample kit that includes not one, not two, but six of their top sellers. That's right, six different samples of their top sellers sent out to you immediately to try. Just cover a small shipping and handling fee, and they're on their way to you. See for yourself why EFX Sports has taken the industry by storm and why so many athletes worldwide depend on their products, dominate their competition safely and legally. Head over to EFXSports.com right now and click the EFX sample kit in the online store and get your free kit today. Once again, that's EFXSports.com.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high-protein potato chips. With 21 grams of high-quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Brian Walsh. Dr. Walsh, give your website so that people can go and learn and get involved.
So the easiest way is to go to drwalsh.com/detox. It's just drwalsh.com/detox. That's my main website. On that page, there's two buttons. There's a button for practitioners and the other button says patients. What I did is I put together two programs, educational programs. And those buttons, incidentally, take you to a different website, which is where I house all my educational programs. One is for practitioners. It's 9 hours plus of video lecture in front of a whiteboard, kind of old-fashioned, where I cover all these studies. I put the studies up on the screen so people can see that I have them and I read them and the titles of these things. I go deep into the physiology and biochemistry of all these different detoxification pathways, and then, of course, teach people about the protocol and how to run it. And then I made a watered-down version for non-practitioners, kind of, you know, savvy. But savvy non-practitioners sometimes do the practitioner version. But the non-practitioner one is only about 4 hours. It also has whiteboard-style lecture videos. I do post the studies that I refer to. It's a little bit lighter on the science, the scientific biochemistry of it all. But the reason why there's so much in there is because one thing that I have a real, I'm a sort of a teacher in my heart, I guess. And, you know, I believe knowledge is power, but it's not just power, it's empower, being empowered to do things. And I don't want to just tell people what to do. I want to know why they're doing it. And as you and I talked about last night on the phone, my goal is to not necessarily say, well, mine is the only detox program out there. I want people, I really mean this. I want people to be able to critically evaluate other detoxification programs and say why it probably isn't, in fact, a very effective one, which saves them time, saves them money, saves them energy. That's really my goal when it comes to this. So drwalsh.com/detox will get people in the right direction.
There you go. So let's talk about lipolysis for a second. It's pretty well accepted that a lot of these xenobiotics end up being stored in fat cells. It's like the body, you know, I guess if they go through the phase 3, they're out there in the fluids, but you don't get rid of them. The body shoves them into the fat cells where they kind of can't hurt anything, so to speak, but they probably are. So if you carry a lot of body fat and you're getting up in age, 40, 50 years old, they're kind of like time capsules of stuff that you came in contact with 30 years ago. Am I right about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, without doubt. You know, interestingly, too, there was a couple of papers, and I'm really glad that the researchers had the foresight to look at this. But it's not just subcutaneous. That there was a couple of studies where they were performing abdominal surgery on the people in the study, and they sampled visceral adipose tissue, and it too stores a considerable amount of xenobiotics. So, which then getting into fat biopsies, nobody's going to biopsy visceral adipose tissue. So, you know, how toxic are we? It's really impossible to know because it's stored all over the body in a variety of different places. So lipolysis, you know, lipolysis, which is essentially the breakdown of stored fat, these fat-soluble compounds, because they're fat-soluble, that's the key. Because they're fat-soluble, just like cholesterol and triglycerides, are going to get stored in adipocytes, in fat cells. And so the first thing, if somebody truly wants to detoxify, the first thing that absolutely, irrefutably must happen is they have to try to put themselves in a state of lipolysis. Otherwise, you're not mobilizing anything. Nothing's coming out.
Right.
So lipolysis, we talked about this on the phone, but there's three principles that must, and I say must with a capital must, be in place if something is going to be a detoxification program. And the first one is lipolysis. There's really interesting studies on all mammals that I've ever read, including humans, that when they go on a hypocaloric diet or just straight up fasting, that levels of xenobiotics always go up in every single person in the studies, every single time. And so, and that's just evidence that once you're in a catabolic or lipolytic state, that these xenobiotics are mobilized. So if somebody has a detoxification program and they say, well, eat whatever you want, that may not be encouraging lipolysis. And therefore it may not be a detoxification program.
Right.
That's the critical first step to even get rid of these things in the first place.
So losing body fat gives the toxins less places to be stored and causes the existing fat cells to squirt their toxins out. And as a result of that, you can actually do things like use the bentonite clay or the charcoal and during fasting, because a lot of those are going to probably end up in the stomach as well. And obviously drink lots of water, sweat, and eat the right foods when you do eat so that you can excrete them. But losing body fat is a critical portion of that one. I mean,
yeah, there's a few pieces of this too. So I mentioned before that there was two papers that I came across, both on human studies, human trials. And what they did is they had cohorts of individuals, and they put them on a hypocaloric weight loss diet. Now, in every single case, their levels of xenobiotic, whatever xenobiotic, I say it, they look for a specific one usually, or a couple, like PCBs or organochlorines, or the studies that I'm referring to now. But in one study, the organochlorines went up when they went on a hypocaloric diet. In the other study, PCBs went up, that's what they're looking for, on a hypocaloric diet. But what they found was, is there was a what's called a negative correlation between the levels of organochlorines or PCBs and thyroid hormone. One of the studies looked at T3. The other one looked at free T4. And the first one also looked at basal metabolic rate and skeletal muscle beta oxidation or you know, fat burning. And so it was this is huge, man. It was negatively correlated. So the higher the level of the xenobiotic in the people that were studied, the lower their thyroid hormone, the lower their metabolic rate, and the lower their basal metabolic rate, their beta oxidation and skeletal muscle. So this then puts a huge question mark in my mind into any fat loss program. If, and I'll just say it outright, if I would, and I need one right now, I'll say a good fat loss, good cutting program, a good fat loss program, I would not do a fat loss program without supporting these detoxification pathways, period. Because what I just said was their metabolic rate, their thyroid hormone, their ability to burn fat and skeletal muscle went down that correlated to the levels of the toxins that went up in the blood while they were on a hypocaloric diet.
That's scary. So, you know, it's really amazing. I know the xenobiotics are not intelligent like microbes or yeast, but it's almost like they're becoming protective. You know, they don't want you to lose body fat. They want their home back. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that too. That the more if you can't get rid of them, then you hold on to it. I don't think that's proven anywhere.
Right.
It's a good story. I don't know, but what's interesting, if you get back to what I said earlier, is many of these things block phase 3, and I don't think they have an intelligence. But it's really curious that they are doing a good job of staying in the body.
So then the next question would be what happens to people who are perpetually lean? If they have no place to store, if they have no fat cells to store these toxins, are they simply excreting them, or are they being stored in more critical tissue, like heart tissue and kidney tissue and stuff like that?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Generally speaking, this is a big generality, is the leaner somebody is, chances are the less toxins that they have stored, because mm-hmm. it's stored in adipose tissue. And in the studies that I've looked at, it's conflicting. Some studies will say that BMI is correlated with the level of toxin exposure or accumulation, I should say. But then other studies say that it's not. So it's very conflicted. Now, because they're fat soluble, they will tend to be stored in tissue that has fat. Now, all of our tissues have some degree of fat.
The brain has fat. That scares me. Like,
yeah.
Do these xenobiotics make it past the brain blood-brain barrier? There's lots of discussions about gut issues causing breaches of the BBB, and could they get in there and get stored in the brain?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. They can be stored anywhere that that's fat. So there's some fat in the heart. It depends on, you know, even in a lean person, there's going to be little bits of fat in the body, and it can be stored there as well. So, but to say that somebody is lean, that they're not toxic, that's too much of a overgeneralization that I think can't be made. You can have an overweight person that may not be as toxic as a lean person. But generally speaking, when I look at somebody that's lean, truthfully, I say, you know, the toxicity or that toxic body burden is probably not one of their big issues.
So there was a book called Fortunes in Formulas. It was published from 1889 to 1924. I have one of the revisions during that people. I think mine was printed in like 1920 or something like that. And the book is kind of like a quasi home remedy, do it yourself, fix things yourself. But as it relates to chemistry for lay people. And there's a chapter in there about poisons. And, you know, if you've ingested this, every single one of the remedies for poisons in that book start or include things like cream and eggs, raw eggs. Yeah. And that's because a lot of those poisons can get trapped up in the lipid, in the fat, in the food. It'll be arrested, sequestered, and passed through you without actually doing some damage. The other thing is charcoal. Anybody who's followed history.
Long history.
Yeah, charcoal.
Yeah, I have a long history of being used for that.
But the point I'm trying to make is, we became fat phobic in the 70s. I'm wondering if that enhanced the storage of the toxins that we were coming in contact with instead of giving them something to ride out of the body. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say it's probably two things. I mean, one is ever since World War II, arguably, is when the majority of synthetic chemicals started being made and released. That's just constantly gone up since then. And so in the 70s was a great rise of synthetic chemicals and the use of chemicals and, you know, and without really any reservations about it. You know, we were talking, when I was a kid living out in Orange County, California, apparently we had some mosquitoes, and I remember that these planes would go overhead at night and spray malathion over everything. I mean, trees and cars and houses and all sorts of stuff. And I know that our closet, our gardening closet that my parents had, good Lord, the number of chemicals in there to spray on just about everything. And there really wasn't any safety precautions back then.
No.
So I would surmise that it could have been a couple of things. One was this sort of rampant use of synthetic chemicals across the board that increased over the decades. But yeah, possibly if we're consuming less fat. But then on the other hand, that's the problem, is a lot of fat consumed from food nowadays is going to contain these things.
Right.
So if, for example, you eat fat from a cow that was being grazed in a farm that used pesticides, and I mean, it's going to be accumulated in that fatty tissue. So I think it's probably a confluence of a lot of things that are food simultaneously.
Excuse me. We did a show yesterday about glyphosate. And interestingly enough, beef, they could find no real traces of glyphosate in it, which baffled me. But then again, it appears that glyphosate clears the system pretty quickly, within a week or so, once the exposure is removed. So it could just be that the cows were exposed to it and then they excreted it before they were processed.
Hmm.
But it was a really interesting show. You should go and listen to it, because this guy, these two guys, one of them is a NASA scientist, the other guy's a former NIH guy. They are kind of, I guess you could call it crowdfunding, a study on glyphosate. People are paying $99 to be tested, and then you fill out the questionnaire and you're part of the study. And they have a lot of really good information about glyphosate environmental exposure and retention in the body and in foods and in water and in all sorts of stuff like that. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff.
Sounds good.
I want to take our last commercial break, and when we come back, I want you to tell me about the new information about sodium bicarbonate. Sodium bicarbonate is becoming all the rage. And interestingly enough, in Europe, they get a lot of calcium bicarb in mineral water. When I was in Ireland, I snapped pictures of all of the labels of mineral water, because when I came back here, I called a couple of the spring water companies that I buy at Kroger's. And when I looked at their mineral content compared to what's going on in Ireland, we have virtually no minerals in our spring water. I don't understand that. Yeah. I don't understand why. But in Europe, they get a lot of bicarb. I mean, There's like 400 milligrams of calcium bicarb in a liter of water, of spring water in Europe. And something's going on with that. So let's talk about that when we come back, okay? All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Brian Walsh.
If you suffer from abdominal bloating, relief is here. Introducing
Atrantil.
Developed by a board-certified gastroenterologist, it relieves bloating where it starts, in the small bowel. That's why
Atrantil
works while other remedies don't. In clinical trials, 88% of bloating sufferers who use prescription medications with no relief found
Atrantil
relieve their symptoms, and it's available without a prescription because
Atrantil
is made from a patented molecular combination of botanical extracts. It's not a probiotic, plus it's natural, vegan, gluten-free, and non-GMO.
Atrantil, Atrantil.
Atrantil. Even the name is proven to make you feel better.
Go to lovemytummy.com and use code SHR for 10% off. That's code SHR at lovemytummy.com. Lovemytummy.com.
Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000. Or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to redcon1.com. That's R-E-D-C-O-N, the number one.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's liveonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Hi, I'm Ashley Grace, co-founder of H-Hemp Company. Hemp CBD improved my life so much that I started H-Hemp Company to help others naturally feel better. You don't have to have had a severe brain injury like me to benefit from H-Hemp Company products. If you're struggling to feel better, calm your brain, or better deal with daily stress and want to do so naturally, please try H-Hemp Company products. Search H-Hemp Company and use code SHR for 20% off and free shipping. That's H-Hemp Company and code SHR.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Brian Walsh. Go ahead and give your website again. It's Brian. Is it Brian Walsh or Dr. Brian Walsh?
DrWalsh.com/detox.
There you go. So you said you found something interesting about possibly urinary pH excretion and baking soda. Talk about it.
Yeah, the short version is, conventional, in the world of nutritional and functional medicine, a lot of times we try to put down conventional medicine. But the reality is they do some things phenomenally well, and they really owe much of what we know about science and how the body works to conventional medicine and science. And so when putting this program together, you know, obviously, well, like activated charcoal, perfect example. That it has a really long history in terms of binding up to toxins to try to increase the excretion of them. So there's two papers that were compelling enough for me to include this in this program. Let me just take a quick step back. One of the things that's not talked about in detoxification programs, unfortunately, is the role of the kidneys. Because it turns out that the acidity of the urine will dictate whether certain xenobiotics are reabsorbed or excreted. Now, again, you have to understand that I cleared out my brain, no more biases about this stuff, and just looked at all this detoxification stuff with fresh eyes. And when I read this, I thought, why the heck is, I mean, we talk about drinking a bunch of water just to make sure things are being excreted. But it turns out, and this is really well established, that the more acidic the urine, the more the body will tend to reabsorb acidic xenobiotics or acidic toxins. The more alkaline or basic the urine, the more it will tend to reabsorb basic or more alkaline xenobiotics. Now, one piece, and I will admit anytime I don't know something, I tried to look into the chemical nature of the majority of xenobiotics out there, at least the classes of them, to find out, well, are more of them acidic or are more of them basic? Because that's going to dictate what you want to do in
right.
terms of trying to do
whether it matters or not, right?
Right. Well, which ones do you want to, if more of them tend to be acidic, then what you'd want to do is try to alkalize the urine. So there's a couple of really, really well done papers that basically showed the magic number, it seems, to have the urinary pH is around 8.0 or above. It could be 7.5 would be, I think, acceptable, or 8.0 or above. Now, to do that through diet is really hard. And so what they did was is they used sodium bicarbonate on the individuals used in these studies, and found that one of them was a review, that the higher the pH, which means less acidic, more alkaline, or more basic, the more xenobiotics were excreted. And one of these was in a toxicology journal, and that's kind of what we're after. So I can't give a specific recommendation of how much sodium bicarbonate someone would need, because your basic urinary pH might be higher than mine, and therefore you would need less sodium bicarbonate in order to shift your urinary pH to above 8.0, and I would need more. So to simply say everybody needs to take a gram of sodium bicarbonate.
Yeah, but you can go to Walgreens. You can go to Walgreens and get Litmus paper and pee on it.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So that's my recommendation, is to go down and for $10. Buy a pack of the urinalysis strips that test pH, and use enough sodium bicarbonate during the detox program to try to alkalize the urine. And I don't get into the acid alkaline thing that everybody talks about.
It's nonsense. The body is very good at managing its pH plasma wise and in cells. And for instance, the brain and the pancreas like to be more acidic. You know what I mean? It's like tissue has its own desire for different levels
of
pH. Yeah,
based on enzyme functions. Phosphatase works well in a more alkaline environment.
Yeah,
so anyways, so I think there's something to it, I will say first. The acid-alkaline balance of the body, there's some merit to that, but the discussions being had about it, I think, are total nonsense. And in this case, so I don't think people need to be ingesting, and I don't care about all, if it's a top selling supplement or thing to try nowadays. You've been around long enough. These things kind of wane and wax
and
come and go.
Yeah.
But for purposes specific to detoxification, I would suggest that during a detoxification program, somebody gets your analysis strips, tests their urine, the pH, probably three times a day, quite honestly, because it can fluctuate a bit, and take an amount of sodium bicarbonate spread throughout the day so they don't give themselves diarrhea. Spread throughout the day to try to get the urine pH at least above 7.5 and trying to get it around 8.0. And again, it seems, and it's a little bit paradoxical, but the more acidic the urine, the more you'll reabsorb acidic-based xenobiotics into the system. So the goal is to try to alkalize it a little bit during the detox.
Getting back to the spring water in Europe and the spring water here, all the spring water in Europe is 7.5, 7.6, 7.7. They put the pH on the bottle. I asked the people at Deer Park, and they say, it just varies, and they don't even know. So, there's another argument for getting better mineral water in your diet every single day as well.
Or just moving to Europe.
Yeah, there you go. So Kirkland Worletti, who actually is the person who booked you on the show, wants to know, are there anything people can do? Is there anything people can do to increase faster elimination of stimulants?
Yeah. There's a very potent genetic component to that, first and foremost.
Yeah, I know.
And caffeine is a classic example of that. There's, you know, and people that will say, well, I can't drink coffee past 2 o'clock or I'm up all night. And there's people that have coffee on their nightstand while they're going to bed, and right. they're just fine.
Right.
That does speak partly to at least phase one, the detoxification or clearance of caffeine. In terms, you know, it's a good question. And admittedly, you know, my slant is towards health.
Right.
And not so much when it comes to this. So I would say what somebody would have to do is to look at how, and when we say stimulants, I don't know if you mean like epinephrine.
He's probably talking about caffeine in some of these pre-workouts, I would imagine. You know, maybe some of the other ones.
About caffeine and nicotine both increase themselves the enzymes that are responsible for their clearance. So simply consuming those with some regularity, I'm not saying consume.
I found that out in Ireland. So when I got to Ireland, because the time difference was bad, I was drinking like triple espressos every single day. By the time I came home, I was that guy you just talked about. I could drink a triple espresso and go to sleep. So I kind of depleted, you know, whatever it was that they were doing to me. It just didn't work anymore.
Yeah. So they by their nature, increase their own clearance, if you will, because they tend to speed up the enzymes that are responsible for their clearance. The thing that, again, I will admit that I don't know is if caffeine or other stimulants go through phase two, and if so, which particular phase. So I would have to actually look that up to know how to clear them out.
Okay,
faster.
So selfishly, what about alcohol? I mean, I take when I do drink, and I know I'm going to go out and have a drink, I take acetyl L-carnitine, about 3 grams of it, because I've been told that it binds to the acetate, and you know, you don't feel hungover the next day. I don't know if it's true. Maybe it's placebo, but is there anything that is worthy of paying attention to if you're going to consume alcohol?
Same deal. Like that's just a specific that I've never looked into because I've never was really interested in it. I've seen some of those protocols, and you know, who knows? I don't really know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, listen. This has been an exciting show, and I appreciate it. And I have newfound respect for the whole detox process now that you've explained it the way you've explained it. I'm going to go to your website and I'm going to sign up for the layperson's course because I'm 60 years old. I'm definitely carrying a lot of crud around in me, and it could be the reason that I have some issues. So I'm going to give
it
a go.
It's worth exploring.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Look, I mean, we have to be honest about what we are exposed to, and the more I think about these types of bad actors, the more I think about degradation of the nervous system and chronic inflammation. And, you know, these are definitely contributors to the problem. There's no doubt about it. So reducing your load can't be bad. It just can't be, you know. So that's it.
Yeah, you know, I know you said you're wrapping it up. One really interesting piece to this, too, that was a real eye-opener.
Please, take as much time as you want. Yeah, go on. Yeah.
Something called the non-monotonic dose response. And this is something that was brand new to me. I'd never heard about when I was looking into this stuff myself. And it turns out, and they're fairly recent papers starting around 2012 and above, but this non-monotonic dose response curve basically shows that it's specific to endocrine disruptors, so I can't say this is the case with heavy metals, but that a low dose is literally just as damaging and just as toxic to physiology as is a high dose. And that, when earlier on in the show I mentioned that ad is that the dose makes the poison, it's interesting because in these toxicology journals, they'll even say that. They'll say, you know, for a long time we believe that the dose makes the poison, but it turns out that doesn't seem to be the case. And that even a low dose exposure causes, and when I have to stress this, just as much physiological damage as a high dose. And people might say, well, how is that possible? Well, a high dose overwhelms the system, and there's just too much for the body to deal with. A, let's say, medium dose the body recognizes it and tries to do something about it. But a low dose is so low that the body doesn't necessarily see it as an issue.
Yeah.
And the thing is a molecule of, let's just say, bisphenol A does what it does no matter what. It doesn't.
Right.
It's not a dose thing. It does it. It's going to disrupt something, where you could talk about arsenic in the citric acid cycle or whatever it might be. Now, if it's only one molecule of it, you're not even going to notice that. But if it's enough of it, but it's not so much that the body recognizes that as a problem, it kind of lets it go unchecked, and it can cause just as much damage. So when you were just saying that, you know, there may be some kind of accumulation, I'm in the same boat as you, man. I believed in it from what I was told. Then I stopped believing in it because of what I read. And then where I land today is it's a very real problem. And I've convinced myself of that based on within the scientific literature. It is a problem. If anybody cares about their health or they have any weird symptoms that don't seem to go away no matter what they try, doing something like this is worth a shot. And it's not necessarily just a one-time deal. You're not going to do a 10-day program and rid yourself of all the toxins. You might have to do the full program is 10 days. I can go into this later, but I have a 4-day program of it that you might do like a couple times a month. And it's based on the fasting, mimicking diet, for example, and you eat certain foods and take the binders and all these things. But, you know, to do 2 rounds of a 4 to 5 day detoxification protocol per month for 3 or 4 months, only then might you actually start to see a difference depending on what you actually have stored.
I fast from 6 p.m. till post-workout, which is usually 10 a.m. every day. Could I rev it up because I am an avid, controlled eater? Can I make it move faster?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically the principles of this, and I'll just kind of go into far more details in the program. But to maximize lipolysis, first of all, you want to do time-restricted feeding. Like, you know, I know you said it before, intermittent fasting. It's nothing new. I mean, this has been talked about for a long time. But time-restricted feeding, I suggest keeping your window of eating around for 6 hours, which is pretty slim. But that's one that is going to help maximize lipolysis. Two is to go hypocaloric. You have to undereat, or else then you're more in an anabolic state and not so catabolic. So hypocaloric, and during, just for a detoxification period. So hypocaloric eating, time-restricted feeding, exercise is going to induce lipolysis, but certain types of exercise are going to be better at it than others. You know, doing bench press and wrestling 3 minutes between your sets is not going to induce lipolysis.
Yeah, high-intensity stuff.
A little bit of high intensity, but not too high, because, you know, then you might kind of get yourself out of lipolysis. With some steady state is a great way. And I'll say this, I would not do a detox program without access to a sauna, period.
I get in a sauna, it's almost 200 degrees every day post-workout. I did it today after doing cardio. I love the sauna.
And that's the goal. So if you can kind of imagine this, so if you're really, truly trying to mobilize these as much as you can, if you are in a hypocaloric state, And by the way, there was a mouse study, I don't have human studies, that suggested that going 25% below your basal metabolic rate increased phase 3 activity. So at least dropping down your calories, I say probably maybe 35% of your basal metabolic rate. So you're doing that, you're time-restricted feeding, you're doing a little bit, I recommend about a half hour, I mean, you know, people are busy, about 15 minutes of high intensity, 15 minutes of steady state, and then jumping in the sauna right afterwards that will keep the metabolism going, keep lipolysis going, is going to be phenomenal for mobilization and then helping excretion via sweat. Then the second piece I mentioned is you have to detoxify these things. I think it has to be largely food-based. So, again, in the human trials that I looked at, there was a specific number of specific vegetables that were eaten, increased certain detoxification enzymes to help support that. Honeybush tea, rooibos tea for glucuronidation and glutathione conjugation. And then the third one is getting rid of this stuff. You have to get it out. That goes back to the sauna, is going to help with that. Sweating is going to help with that. Alkalizing the urine a little bit is going to help with the excretion of these things in the kidneys. But then that's where all those binders come into play too. So, I've seen some pretty awesome results when people follow that specific type of protocol.
What about the planned phlebotomy? You and I talked about this last night. I'm a big, big proponent of it for a variety of reasons. But my theory is, you know, you change the oil in your car, you can't change your blood, but you can if you give blood every couple months, the
Red Cross will allow you to do that at some point in time, because your body's making new blood to take up the space. At some point in time, you're getting rid of a lot of the stuff that's traveling around in your blood.
Yeah. So if you're in a hypocaloric state and you're time restricted feeding and you're trying to maximize lipolysis, your levels will go up. And if you take out a pint of blood, then they're leaving your body. So yes, it would. And like you talked about, then you're giving somebody a whole load of toxins.
I'm sorry about that.
So that's a whole different thing.
I'm sorry about that. But you know what?
Here's a bunch of heavy metals for you. But
yeah.
No, but that technically would be a way of getting rid of some. But it's also in a finite window. I mean, let's say you're doing a five-day detox program. You probably wouldn't give a pint of blood every single day during that.
No. They only allow you every, I think it's every 8 or 9 weeks that's the maximum you can go.
Yeah. So, but right in the midst of it, if somebody wants, I don't recommend it. I don't have a problem with it. But no, that would be a way of getting rid of some of them in there. Sure.
Yeah. This is really interesting. Getting back to the discussion about a little bit when it comes to these endocrine disruptors, a little bit seems to be just as bad as a lot. So on the show yesterday, and I don't remember the numbers, but the scientist I had on the show said he alluded to. That like when you look at testosterone or estrogen, you know, and it's you know, nanograms per deciliter or picograms per deciliter, and then you look at toxins and they talk about parts per billionth, and he said 5 parts per billionth is pretty similar to the normal estrogen levels that a guy may have in his body. So
absolutely.
when you talk about, well, you have just a little tiny bit of bisphenol A, it could be 30 parts per billion. It could actually be more than your natural testosterone level.
Yeah, I don't have the exact quote. I show it in the programs that I do on the screen, and I forget what he said, but he basically, he was an endocrinologist, I think from UCLA, but he basically said, you know, this whole thing about dose is ridiculous because, you know, you're talking to an endocrinologist, and it's in the same levels as some of these hormones.
Right.
Which by the way, at that dose of estrogen is extremely potent. It's incredibly potent.
Right.
So, you know, to talk about these things and say, oh, it's not a problem. Well, wait a minute. They're in the same dose as these other things. The endocrine disruptors have some of the same potency. Like, this was a great one, too. This is a rodent study. I always try to make sure that's clear. So they took 2 groups of overectomized mice, female mice. They didn't have ovaries. This speaks to a few of these things that we're talking about. They injected both sets of mice with a toxin. And then a couple weeks later, one group got to eat normally. The other group, they had fast. Now, the levels of the toxin, as we've talked about, went up in the group that fasted. But what was really scary, in fact, was that the uterine weight, the uterus, which is an estrogen receptive organ in females, weighed more than did the group that ate the normal diet. So yes, their levels went up, which we've talked about. But they had no ovaries, so they had no estrogen.
Right.
So the only thing that could have made the uterus of these little mice weigh more or be larger was this xenobiotic. So again, you know, the dose absolutely matters. Absolutely matters. And especially, like you said, I'm glad they mentioned it because that's been a discussion in some of these toxicology journals. Like, why are we talking about dose? I mean, you're talking to an endocrinologist, and the dose of these things is minuscule, of hormones is minuscule in the first place, and these things may actually be higher than that. So anyhow.
Well, and there was a study that I read, it was probably 10 years ago, that showed that women, postmenopausal women who underwent rapid weight loss, regardless, you know, lap band, whatever, the incidence of breast cancer and uterine cancer like quadrupled. And I read this study, I was like, sure, because all of those xenoestrogens are being squirted out into the bloodstream all at the same time, plus all the other crap that they've stored for the past 40 years in their fat cells, and their body can't handle that, and so they develop cancers.
Yeah, you know, this, I can't really say this because it was something I read about 20 years ago, shoved somewhere in my brain. Now it makes more sense. But I read somewhere that they suggested that rapid weight loss could be a carcinogen.
Yes.
From the perspective that you're talking. Now, I have nothing to corroborate that, but it's certainly interesting to consider.
No, but it would hurt Jenny Craig and those companies really bad if that was case. You know, somebody should go back and do a survey of all their customers that had rapid weight loss and how many developed ovarian or breast cancer or some cancer of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah, well, this goes back to what I said before, is I personally would not do a fat loss program without supporting detox. I'd make it a fat loss detoxification program, quite honestly. And this, you know, referring back to one of those papers I mentioned before, looking at xenobiotic levels in thyroid hormones, the recommendation of the authors of that study said, because of this, we recommend a more moderate weight loss program because their levels went up, because it shut down the metabolic rate in thyroid hormones. They said that people really should do a more moderate program. And that's fine. But what I read into that was, or you could do a weight loss program, but greatly support sweating and detoxing and get rid of the stuff while you're doing it. That it doesn't have to be a moderate weight loss
program. It's brilliant.
I think rapid could be okay as long as you're supporting the detoxification pathways and you're actively trying to excrete these things via binders, via sweating, et cetera.
Well, you know, everybody is always on some sort of weight loss program. Like I just turned 60. I've got a lot of muscle on me. I want to get as lean as I can. And there are days where I feel really crappy and I have no explanation. You know, and I'm getting lean. I mean, I can see the veins up above the middle of my thighs now. I just have the love handles, and the lower pooch below the navel to go. But, you know, I never thought about it. Those days that I just feel kind of foggy and crappy, it could be the release of a lot of these stored xenobiotics that are hitting me really hard, because I always feel great after I train and after I sauna. I feel like, oh, man, you know, that's my medicine. That makes me feel good. But I wake up in the morning and I feel like somebody hit me in the head with a frying pan.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. This is fascinating. I got to tell you. I'm not only impressed with what you've done, but I think that we all owe you a great debt of thanks, because the hucksters have crapped on this whole concept of, I mean, have you seen that stupid foot bath? Because the water
I mean, foot baths or foot pads or colonics or enemas or skin brushing. People say drink some lemon juice in the morning is a great way to detoxify your body. It's a bunch of garbage. It's crap. And, you know, again, whether or not somebody follows what I'm saying or does one of my programs, truly, what I really wanted to do is introduce a new conversation that I think we all need to be having. If that makes sense. That if researchers hear this and they say, well, let's do some research on this topic, we haven't really thought about it. Like, for example, that fasting mimicking diet, which I'm sure you've heard of.
Right.
I think it's right long ago. It's phenomenal. It's brilliant what he put together. But my problem is, and this is not his area of expertise, and that's fine. So he has very specific macronutrient ratios for people to follow, but he doesn't say what food. So you can eat rice and avocados, and you're meeting his macronutrient ratios, and you're increasing longevity and improving insulin resistance and all these things, metophagy or autophagy. But if you're going on a hypocaloric diet, like I said, every single study that I've ever seen around the world, there's a Taiwanese study where their levels went up after an exposure when they were doing a fast, is your levels are going up. If you are not supporting, and then this is that three-tiered principle, you have to mobilize, which they're doing, but you have to supply the body with things that will augment or support detoxifying these things. And three is you must actively try to excrete these things. You can't just assume they're being excreted or detoxified. So it's a brilliant concept, and I included his fasting mimicking diet macronutrient ratios in my program because it's so great. However, I tell people to eat specific foods to meet those macronutrient ratios and not just eat whatever they want, because it's a concern. If you go hypocaloric, if you stop eating, if you fast in any way, your levels will go up if you have any storage, and most people do. And if you're not actively trying to detoxify or excrete these things, then I mentioned to you last night about that yo-yo diet study with rodents.
Right.
When they went hypocaloric, their levels went up. When they went hypercaloric, those toxins that went up went into different tissues. And then they went hypocaloric again, and they went back up, and then they went hypercaloric, and they went in different tissues.
Yeah.
So we have to get rid of these things.
Yeah, the toxins are playing musical chairs with your tissue. They're out there walking around. The music stops. They go, oh, I'm closest to the liver. I'm going in there. That's it.
Or the brain. Yeah. Or your left handle, wherever it might be. Yeah. So that's why I really, truly think that if anybody's going to do any kind of fat loss program, it should be fat loss/detox.
I love it.
Because otherwise, you don't know potentially what harm you're causing.
I got to thank you for doing this. I really do, because you've not only made me a believer in the process, and I'm going to do it, but I think that you've done the industry a great service by explaining to people that it doesn't require you to buy fancy schmancy stuff to get this done. It's just eating the right foods and taking the right steps, and that's it. And I commend you. I know that you're going to be hopefully traveling around the U.S. and doing lectures. Can people contact you on your website and join a mail list so that you can let them know when that actually starts happening and where you're going to be?
Yeah. DrWalsh.com is kind of, that's the place to go.
So reach out to them and let them know your city. And if you would think you think that, you have a lot of people that would enjoy sitting down and actually having an intimate discussion about this and a lecture, go to his website.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. Listen, thanks a lot. Excuse me. Thanks a lot for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care. And that's all we have for today. So I'm going to say goodbye until tomorrow's Friday. I'm off the air. I'll see you Monday. We have a great show planned Monday. You don't want to miss Monday's show. A new perspective on leaky gut. It's not just the food that's leaking through your stomach. See you then.